Advanced Studio Classroom is on the air.
Chicago's Little Green Birds, today on Advanced. Hello, listeners, and welcome back to another Advanced Studio Classroom. My name is Simon, and you are joining both myself and my co-host Garrett in the studio today for the third part of our September Newsworthy Clips. Garrett, what are we talking about today?
We're talking about birds.
Mm-hmm. It's an article called A South American Survivor in the Windy City. South American Survivor, it sounds like some sort of
fugitive,
refugee or immigrant of some kind who is, you know, made the journey to America and fought and survived. And that actually is true. It's just not a person in this case.
No. Nope.
What is the Windy City?
The Windy City is a nickname for the city of Chicago. And from what I've heard, it's not actually describing the wind there. It has more to do with politics.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I did not know that. Because it is quite windy.
So
like,
I've
it's
heard.
A cold city during the winter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they say, I think back 100 or 200 years ago, all the politicians there were kind of full of it. So they're described as like windy.
Talking a lot.
I believe. You might want to fact check me on that.
So this is sort of the Chicago equivalent of calling New York the Big Apple, I suppose, right? It's the nickname of the city that is, I mean, it's pretty well recognized, right? It's in common usage.
Absolutely.
People would know this. Not as famous as New York, of course. But, you know, a lot more interesting than Los Angeles's City of Angels kind of.
People don't use that.
Not very creative at all. That's why people don't use it, maybe. Nonetheless, we're going to be introduced to these basically invasive birds. Birds that should not be in Chicago, but are in Chicago and are running wild. This is kind of an interest article. We do these from time to time. I think Linda C. probably likes this kind of article because usually when I'm doing them with her and we're talking about things like lizards in Florida swamps that are not supposed to be in Florida swamps.
I enjoy those articles.
We've done ones on fish in the Mississippi River too that are not supposed to be there. This is one of those articles. And so, you know, interesting stuff. Let's get into it. Let's see if Campbell will read it for us. We're going to do two readings today, listeners. I would encourage you to get your magazine out and open it up to the Newsworthy Clips. If you don't have a magazine, consider getting one. It's an easy way to support us here and improve the quality of your own English learning. So without further delay, Campbell, help us out. Let's read this.
A South American Survivor in the Windy City. At a quiet intersection in Chicago's Englewood neighborhood, the imposing figure of a pine tree is only outweighed by the massive collection of sticks and twigs carefully placed on its branches. It's a huge communal nest for monk or Quaker parakeets who have called the structure home for the last 25 years or so. Generations of these tiny, raucous, bright green birds from South America have survived, even thrived in Chicago, beginning when likely escapees of the exotic pet trade first put down roots in some south suburbs in the 1960s and Hyde Park in the 1970s, and through every unforgiving winter in the Windy City since. Despite their well-standing local presence, in many ways, the species remains a mystery to bird experts and enthusiasts alike. The inaccessibility of their nests, difficulties catching them to be banded, a priority focus on researching vulnerable and native species, and emerging factors like climate change present challenges to their study. In their native range, they don't tolerate cold climates really at all, but they can tolerate that here because of backyard bird feeders, said Stephen Pruitt Jones, Professor Emeritus of Ecology and Evolution at the University of Chicago. It's really about getting enough energy to keep yourself warm, said Christopher Appelt, an associate professor at St. Xavier University.
All right. Thank you very much, Campbell, for that reading. We're told at the beginning here, well, I guess they basically start by describing a scene in Chicago. They use a couple of terms that are not particularly familiar to me, like Englewood. You know, a quiet intersection, of course, that's where two roads meet. Presumably, they are not busy roads because the intersection is quiet. But it's in Chicago's Englewood neighborhood. Do you know anything about this?
I have never been to Chicago.
So it's just the name of a neighborhood.
Yeah.
Okay. So we're in this quiet neighborhood, and the imposing figure of a pine tree is only outweighed by the massive collection of sticks and twigs carefully placed on its branches. So when we describe something as an imposing figure, we often use this term for people, right?
Yeah. Normally, they're quite sizable and maybe
like
a little
physically
bit,
big?
Yeah, and maybe a little bit intimidating.
I tend to think of it as referring to someone's power.
Mm-hmm.
Like a boss who is very in control is an imposing figure, even if they are only 160 centimeters tall.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess you can use it to refer to power or physical size. But when you're talking about a tree, they're going to be talking about the physical size.
Yeah.
So they've got this huge tree, but despite the fact the tree is huge, it's outweighed by the collection of sticks and twigs placed in its branches. So presumably that's a nest.
Yeah. That's what I was thinking.
Or multiple nests. And the nests are so numerous and large that they are more noticeable than the size of the tree here. So it tells us it's a huge communal nest for monk or Quaker parakeets. Now, presumably that's the same thing. It just has two names.
Okay.
I would think so. Monk or Quaker parakeets.
Could be.
Do you know what a parakeet is? You said it was like a, I'm going to say pigeon here, but you
said parrot.
Like a parrot,
well,
right?
I think they're similar, but parakeets are, I believe, a little smaller.
Yeah. I'm not a real pet bird lover myself, but I know people who are. When I think of parakeet, what I think of is like a small, colorful songbird, kind of a tropical bird, but a mini version of a parrot that isn't talking.
Yeah, and I believe they're quite popular as pets.
Okay, fair enough. So apparently they live communally, which basically means they don't live, you know, like an individual family, mom and dad and baby birds in one nest. It's like a whole bunch of families living in a giant nest together, like communal shares the same root word as community, right? So there's this huge community of these birds in this tree, and they have called the structure home for 25 years. Wow. They're firmly in place in that neighborhood,
yeah.
I suppose. Yeah. Tells us generations of these tiny, and here there's a term here that describes them, raucous.
Raucous, yeah.
What are raucous birds?
They're birds that are loud.
High energy, dancing around, flying around, zipping around, making lots of tweeting. They're bright green birds from South America. And here's the whole part about being survivors. They have survived and even thrived in Chicago, beginning when likely escapees of the exotic pet trade first put down roots in some south suburbs in the 1960s and Hyde Park in the 1970s. This is a very long sentence.
Yes.
They're basically saying they were popular as pets at one point. Some of them escaped, and they decided to live in these suburbs. And then they name a bunch of the suburbs, Hyde Parks, the southern suburbs, the time frames when they were popular, or maybe the time frames when they escaped anyway. Mm. And this is the part that is the survival part. They've survived through every unforgiving winter in the Windy City. Could call it the Winter City, though. It is brutal in the winter, yeah. I have been there in the winter, and it is.
I've seen pictures.
It is not a kind city to live in during the winter. So they've survived. That, I suppose, is the surprising thing. They're tropical birds from the jungle.
Chicago, the climate is very different from South America.
It's a good thing they're raucous, energy-filled, and communal. They're relying on each other to stay alive. Okay, it tells us that their well-standing local presence, What is that? What does that mean?
Well, they're very well known in this community, I suppose.
Now, there's a similar phrase. We say someone has good standing.
Mm-hmm.
When you say somebody, when you talk about standing like that, you're talking about their reputation, right?
Right.
So presumably these birds are fairly popular in the neighborhood. They're not like pigeons that or seagulls that are like stealing people's French fries and getting protests, you know, stuff like that. The parakeets are loved. Okay, so they are loved. Nice. Despite their well-standing local presence, in many ways, the species remains a mystery to bird experts and enthusiasts alike. Tell us why. Why are they a mystery?
Well, the inaccessibility of their nests, difficulties catching them to be banded, a priority focus on researching vulnerable and native species, and emerging factors like climate change, all of these things present challenges to studying them.
Okay, so they're hard to study.
Yeah.
Because their nests are inaccessible, which basically means it's hard to get to them.
Yeah.
I guess because they're up in trees.
Yeah.
You'd think they could get a ladder. Get some graduate students, make them climb ladders.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe the nests are like deep in the trees. You get through lots of leaves.
Maybe you get attacked by parakeets. Aggressive parakeets.
They are raucous.
So it's hard to get to the nests. It's difficult to catch them to be banded. Now, banding, basically, they put like a little thing around their leg, right?
Yeah, to keep track of them.
With like a number. So then if you catch them again, you say like, oh, this is a bird that was caught on.
That's Simon.
You just kind of.
The parakeet.
Oh, Simon the parakeet. You kind of keep track of them. It's difficult to catch them, pardon me. So that you can do that. And then there's also a priority on researching vulnerable native species. So what does that really mean? It means there's not very much money to research the parakeets. Everybody's focused on the local species that are endangered or having problems. So these parakeets, mostly left alone. There are also emerging factors like climate change that present challenges to their study. It's not clear to me why climate change.
That doesn't make sense to me.
But maybe, you know, anyway, we then get into a quote. And what's our quote tell us?
We see in their native range, they don't tolerate cold climates really at all, but they can tolerate that here because of backyard bird feeders.
Oh, this is back to their good standing in the community, right? People are feeding them.
Yeah.
People are like, look at those cute little birds. Now I can have pet birds and I don't have to take responsibility for the pet birds. I can just give them seed.
It reminds me of my grandparents. They would always have a hummingbird feeder in the backyard.
We don't see a lot of bird feeders here.
No.
You want to just briefly tell any of our listeners who aren't familiar with them, like, what is the whole bird feeder thing?
Well, it's essentially something you'd have like hanging maybe in your back porch or your backyard, and you fill it up sometimes with kind of like a sweet liquid, but it could be like seeds or something like that, and birds come up and eat.
You're really presenting like a broad brush description. That what I would say first for our unfamiliar listeners is that when we say bird feeder, we're not talking about like feeding the birds, like scattering some seeds on the ground, which you do see, you know, all over the place, right? What we're talking about is like a physical structure. It looks kind of like a little building or something that holds food for birds. And you're basically putting food in this thing every day or a couple of days, and the birds come and take all the food.
Yeah.
So the reason you would do this is you'd like put it outside your window or something so that when you are standing at your window, you can watch the birds
or maybe
feeding.
You like the sounds of the birds.
You like the sounds. So you're encouraging the birds to be around your house. Now, you mentioned a liquid one. Those ones are for hummingbirds.
Right, because I'm more familiar with the hummingbird ones.
Because hummingbirds are awesome.
They're cool.
They're sensitive, so they're kind of hard to keep around, you know. Mm. They're like a real challenge in the bird feeding world.
Mm.
Nonetheless, basically, these birds, they don't do well in the cold weather in their original home. And I would assume the reason for that is food availability is a problem.
It sounds like it.
So it's not that they're like freezing to death. It's that they can't get food during colder weather. But in Chicago, you know, everybody's putting out seeds for them. So there's no problem getting food, and that helps them survive through the winter. And this, we see this expressed in the last sentence there. It's really about getting enough energy to keep yourself warm. So they have the ability to keep themselves warm if they have enough food to stay active, to stay warm. This comes from an associate professor at St. Xavier University. Oh, what's this business in the next reading? The gang. That's also a big topic in Chicago, isn't it? Chicago's kind of known for
especially in the street gangs, the south side.
Violence. And they did mention that southern neighborhoods were places, southern suburbs were places. Maybe the birds have become involved in the drug trade. We're going to have to find out when Campbell reads this for us. Go ahead, Campbell.
The Monk Parakeet Gang. The childhood memories of many Southside residents, like Edgar Florentino, are often peppered with the shrill squawks and green blurs of monk parakeets. His father, who worked as a tailor in Hyde Park in the early 2000s, would bring Florentino to the neighborhood on weekend errands to try and catch a glimpse of the birds. "It was very beautiful," Florentino said. "My knee-jerk reaction is always, a non-native species is a potential problem," said Appold. He thought maybe the big groups of monk parakeets could be coming in as a noisy motorcycle gang, intimidating other birds at feeders. But his research found that was not the case. In a city, food sources for birds often abound in ornamental plants, feeders, and food waste.
Okay, so this whole gang thing, I don't know how into birds our listeners are, but there were a few common, I don't know if it's really an expression, but sort of common pieces of wisdom. Mm-hmm. Like, for example, I grew up being told that sparrows drive out all other birds.
Okay.
Do you know what I mean by that? They basically mean, like, when you see a sparrow appear at your bird feeder, by tomorrow, there are going to be 300 sparrows, and there aren't going to be any other kinds of birds.
Okay.
Like, there's going to be so many of them, and they're all going to come together that they're going to take all the food, and all the other birds will be gone. So, little sparrows frequently not very welcome at bird feeders. You want more colorful, magnificent, exciting birds. So, there is sort of some, I don't know, tension in the bird world between bird species. There's some competition going on. And that, I think, is what they're alluding to when they talk about the gang here. So we're introduced to a person named Edgar Florentino, who kind of has a story, because they've been around for 25 years, right? So the story here goes back to a childhood memory. What is the childhood memory?
All right. Well, his memories are first described here. His memories are peppered with the shrill squawks and green blurs of monk parakeets.
Okay. Shrill squawks. That does sound more like a parrot than a songbird, doesn't it?
Mm.
Okay. So what, you want to do a squawk so our listeners know what a squawk is?
Oh, dear. I don't know.
Now, bear in mind, this is onomatopoeia, that fancy word where we use it to describe words that are supposed to be sounds. Like knock, knock is the sound knock, knock.
Yeah.
And clap your hands is the sound clap, 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 right?
Uh-huh.
Bang, boom, woof, all of these. Squawk is literally squawk, squawk. We did it. Oh, that's excellent. So this is, it's kind of like a parrot sound.
Mm-hmm.
That's how we describe a squawk, right? So parrots say like, what? Polly wants a cracker or whatever, right? So that what is the squawk sound. Shrill is something different. It kind of means high-pitched.
And annoying.
And annoying, loud, like it bothers your ears. The green blur, that's not a sound.
No.
What's that?
The parakeets, we described them earlier, are this bright green color.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a blur because presumably there were so many of them, they were flying fast all around.
Yeah, I'm thinking like they're flying past you so quickly. Green would kind of stand out. Bright green would stand out in this environment. So you would notice it and turn your head to look, but the bird is already gone. So he has memories of basically the birds being around throughout his childhood memories. His father, he goes on to tell us, basically worked in Hyde Park, which was one of the neighborhoods they had mentioned. He worked as a tailor, meaning he made clothes, in the early 2000s, and he would bring Edgar along. Why would he bring him along?
Well, it wasn't during the work week. It was during weekends. Mm-hmm. He needed to run errands or maybe go out and take care of business, buy things. He would bring Edgar along, and they would try and see the birds.
This is a very North American thing. One of the best reasons to have children in a North American cultural context is because you can make them do work for you, right? Give them chores, send them on errands. So this is what's going on. He's in this area where these birds are. And so they're kind of an ever-present part of, I guess, his memories from growing up. How does he describe this memory?
It was very beautiful.
Yeah. Now, as we go on, we get into sort of the difficulty of the parakeet. It's an invasive species. So very quickly, an invasive species, it's like an invasion, right? Mm-hmm. These animals do not belong here, but they have come in and settled. And the whole problem with them, what is that?
Usually when they come in, they impact the other kinds of animals in the area.
Yeah, the animals that are supposed to be there usually aren't well equipped to defend themselves against the effects of the new birds. So even if the new birds aren't killing or attacking the native birds that belong there, they're maybe competing for food, things like that. And so they tend to have an effect because they're really not supposed to be there. And so we kind of get this as an illusion here. We're told my knee-jerk reaction. What is a knee-jerk reaction?
It is a reaction that you have like right as something is happening without thinking through it too much.
It's like automatic. It actually comes from when you visit the doctor for a health check, where the doctor takes that little hammer and whacks your knee.
Yeah.
And your knee kind of kicks. You don't have to think about it. You can't control it. It's just an automatic sort of thing. So that's your knee-jerk reaction. And the reaction here is a non-native species, an invasive species, is a potential problem. This comes from Appelt. He thought maybe the big groups of monk parakeets could be coming in as a noisy motorcycle gang. Like that. Intimidating other birds at feeders. So like our sparrows, just overwhelming the bird feeders, taking all the food. Was that the case?
No, it was not. His research found that was not the case. In a city, food sources for birds often abound in ornamental plants, feeders, and food waste.
It's interesting. So there's tons of food available in cities. You don't have to worry about that competition. It's interesting. I wonder if that's true in all cities or what the area we're talking about specifically here in Chicago is suburbs.
Yeah.
And suburbs are very different than the city.
Yeah. If it's in the city center and there's a lot of just big apartment buildings, maybe there isn't as much space for things like bird feeders.
Well, and even if you hung a bird feeder, like off your balcony, the birds don't just like go and sit on the bird feeder. They like kind of hide in the trees around your house, zip into the bird feeder, grab some food, and then zip out again, you know, because they want to be safe. They don't want to be exposed. And so if you, you know, lived on the 10th floor and you put a bird feeder out, I bet you would not get very many birds.
That makes sense.
Yeah. You'd need sort of shelter. So the difference with the suburbs and the city is there's more space. So it's like houses surrounded by yards.
Yep.
Kind of not really a supernatural environment, but natural enough for birds and squirrels and things like that. So I think probably the suburbs are the reason people are doing feeders, things like that. Well, Garrett, I don't know. How do you feel about the parakeets? Would you like to import some?
I would not. My experience at my apartment right now is that birds love to congregate on our balcony, on the railings there, and it's very annoying. It's not just the sound, but the things that they like to drop all over.
This, you know, this is a real problem with scooter parking. You know, like in this city, we have a growing number of beautiful streets, tree-lined streets, you know? And the advantage of this is huge because it means you can like walk more in the summer because you're in the shade and it makes everything like more comfortable and environmentally friendly and improves the air quality. There's like all these positives. But the disadvantage is that when you park your scooter under the tree, sometimes you find gifts, gifts from the birds above when you return, and that's not so enjoyable. Yeah, maybe it would be different if we were in the suburbs.
Could be. And I this has been my impression lately, because I ride a bicycle around town a lot, and birds, they don't like move away as quickly as they used to.
They're becoming less afraid.
They know they don't need to be afraid of me, but it's very annoying.
I don't know if you've ever been hit by a flying friend above who has dropped a gift on you. I have, but not very frequently, but once.
And I've been hit by the gift, but not the bird itself.
Oh, yeah, that's what I mean, the gift. I've been told that this is a sign of great fortune coming your way.
I have heard that.
Yeah. So maybe it's a good thing to have parakeets.
Maybe.
Yeah. We have lots of our own birds, though.
Yeah.
Let's not worry about the parakeets too much. Nonetheless, listeners, that brings us to the end of our newsworthy clips for September. We hope you'll join us again soon, though, for another Advanced Studio Classroom. Until then, I'm Simon.
I'm Garrett.
Saying goodbye for now.
Goodbye.